Okay, so my name is Tim Jones, and I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust and the One Earth Project in Trafalgar Square. It's the 16th of August, 2009, and the time is 8:15 p.m. If you could please tell us your name, age, and where you come from.
My name is Jill Fickrey. I am 55, I have to think about that one, and I live in Cheltenham.
Thank you. Can you tell us when it was you first found out about the One Earth?
I think it was on a news programme. I was probably pounding the gym at the time, watching early morning television, which I don't normally watch unless I'm at the gym, and I think there would have been an article on that. And that was enough for me. The idea of doing something completely different, and all I had to do was to sign up, and I might get chosen and I might not, but at least I'd signed up for it, and that's what really appealed.
And what was it that particularly struck you about the project?
The individuality of it, that it was a living snapshot, really, of life conducted on a small scale. I mean, because the plinth is very small, we didn't, you know, there wasn't any, and the time was small, there wasn't any small-scale farming or anything. You know, I haven't yet seen hens up there, maybe they have been. But just that everybody was free to do exactly what they wanted. And I have to say the coverage has been mesmeric. I am embarrassingly addicted to turning my computer on and going, oh my goodness, what are they doing? Because it's so individual. And that's what I love. And when there's something faintly ridiculous happening, I just hear myself going, that is so British, that is so fantastic that that person can do that and the rest of us can watch or not watch. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful project.
And how did you feel when you received the email to say you'd been allocated a slot?
Oh, I got a phone call, as you do in the most awkward moment, and I won't tell you where I was. I got a phone call and I couldn't quite hear, and I asked them to shout, so they screamed, because there was a cancellation. So I've had very little notice, which has been even more exciting, you know, trying to email the world, tell them what I'm doing, and then sending the wrong link page, and then having to resend it all. And just blown away with excitement, so disproportionate to what it is. I mean, just standing somewhere for an hour. I am beyond excited.
And who are you doing this for?
Me. Me. It's all about me. For an entire hour, it's all about me. So I'm going to be doing what I like doing. Eating chocolate, because the world is a very dull place without chocolate. I knit. I know that's very, very sad. Pause for groans from the world, but I do knit and I love it. And one of my friends who's watching online doesn't know how to knit, so I thought I'd, you know, just teach her while she's watching on the webcam and see if I can get a scarf finished in an hour. So a bit of a challenge there.
And what kind of reaction would you want from the crowd?
I don't want to have anything thrown at me. I don't think I'm going to be talking much to the crowd, and I think with work tomorrow they should all be heading home by 9 o'clock, but I have a whole list of people I want to say hello to, because that's what you do. You say you're going to do something like this, and then they say, oh, that's interesting, and then something comes out, oh well, say hello to me, and you go, oh yeah, right, and I've written all the names down. So I'll be doing that, which would be quite exhausting, or I might not bother. But the first thing that came to mind when I heard that I was going to do this was I wanted a sort of a caption for it. And for some reason, I heard my mother saying, when I was small, being an older person, apparently I'm not old, but I feel it, you used to be accused of, when you were having a tantrum in a shop, never called a tantrum, it was called making a public exhibition of yourself. And I was just so excited because I stood, my mother died a few years ago, and I stood outside and shouted, yes, I am going to make a public exhibition of myself. So I've actually downloaded those words and I've got them and laminated, and I'm going to hang them on my little chair on the plinth, because I am making a public exhibition of myself and it will be fun.
And how do you think then this experience is going to affect, what would you like to take away from the experience?
Well, it's certainly going to be a view of London I've never had before. I just think being one of such a small number of people in a living in a living sculpture, changing sculpture, it's going to be something I remember forever. I think it's one of those things that lots and lots and lots and lots of people that I've talked to have said, oh, that's a really good idea, how do I sign up? But their intentions were to, and they never did. And because I'm on my fourth life now, I've had three life-threatening illnesses, and now I'm on my fourth life, I don't do that, I just do it. Sign up for something, yes, this is all signed up for, and I've already signed up to be a volunteer for the Olympic Games in 2012, and I did that 2 years ago. Now, I just think that if you have had serious illnesses, your life takes a different turn, and my life now is grab it, do it. Well, I think it's a famous sportswear company whose logo is just do it, and I think that's really important to me, you know. You just don't know what the future holds, and for me, this is just fantastic.
So can you let us know a little bit about what you do for a living, or what you do kind of on a weekday, and what you do for in your spare time?
Boring, really. Right, married for 20-something years, 23 years, two boys in their 20s, and we live in Cheltenham, lived overseas a great deal. I have a part-time job as I call myself an office manager because that sounds quite big and grown up, but there's only two of us in the office, so I just tell him what to do when he wants me to. But that's part-time, so that I can fit in all the other things I want to do. So I knit, which is sad, and I go to the gym, and I want to keep bees, and what else do I do? I do lots of things, really. I do a lot of voluntary work and things like that, and I see lots of friends, and I belong to the Pink Cinema Club, which is a group of girls who go to the cinema once a fortnight, and not a bloke in sight. We just go and be very silly. I go out a lot, and I just do lots of things. I don't like to be doing nothing. In fact I can't do nothing. I can't sit still and do nothing. So I love my garden. I came to gardening very late, about 2 years ago, and I love my garden, and I spend a lot of time there, and I cook, sort of generally lots of stuff, really, but all ordinary things. They're not amazing. Some things are amazing, this is amazing, but a lot of it's very ordinary, and when you've thought that you might not come through an illness, just being ordinary and not being in hospital and not being different is really quite nice. Just being normal. Yeah.
For the record, tell us a little bit about these conditions and how maybe they kind of affected you.
A couple of them I can. I had encephalitis as a child and nearly died, so that's a big one. And the most recent one was breast cancer, which I developed in 2003. So 2003 was spent, I had a lumpectomy where they rip the cells away, and then I had chemo and then radio, and I lost all my hair, and at the end of that was the end of November when I finished all my treatment, and in October I decided I was going to do the moonwalk. You know, the London Moonwalk, which is to raise awareness and funds for breast cancer. And at that point, I couldn't walk to the post box. But by the June, I was able to do the half marathon. And this year, my children said, if you can do the half marathon half dead, although I wasn't half dead, but I wasn't fully recovered, now that you are fully recovered, you can do the full marathon. So why don't you? And when your children throw down the gauntlet like that, you find yourself, at least I did, thinking, yeah, why not? It was so far ahead at that point. Anyway, we did. A group of us did the Edinburgh Marathon, full marathon, all 26 point whatever it is miles, in May this year. So that's another thing. You know, somebody said do it, so I do. It's just grasping everything, because you just don't know. This was a routine mammogram, and I was feeling fine. And then you get a letter which has five different places says do not worry, you know, this is probably nothing. at which point I knew that it was something, and my whole life changed. But although it's not something I expected as a result of having breast cancer, but having had it has meant that I have focused my life on positive things that I want to do, and I don't do any of the dross. If I don't want to do it, I now feel old and wise enough to go, no thanks, I don't want to do that. But things I do want to do, I do go for.
And what is it you're going to be doing then up on the cliff for half an hour?
Oh, well, not a lot, really. I'm going to have a good look round and take some photographs. I'm going to eat 2 bars of chocolate. I reckon I can get through 2 huge bars of chocolate in an hour, and I will not be sharing it with anybody on the ground. And I'm going to knit a scarf and teach my friend Mel how to knit, because she's going to be watching on the live webcam from Cheltenham. And I reckon I could probably get it finished in an hour if I'm quick. And I will be displaying my lovely notice saying, making an exhibition of myself, either upon my person or upon the chair, because I am.
And who is it that's going to be tuning in? Who have you told about the experience? Who's going to be sharing it?
Just about everybody that I know, really. I've got friends in overseas, friends in Cheltenham, relatives. Some relatives are coming, actually. I've got a boy, one of my children is working today, so he's going to phone me. That might be quite fun, to take a few phone calls up there and go and not quite let on what I'm doing until later on, remembering not to swear. That's one of the bits of advice my son gave me. Don't swear, Mum. Okay. I just think hanging out there is going to be quite cool. But I've got to get over my fear of heights, really, to begin with. So that's going to be challenge number one. Going up in that cattle cart, it's going to be, because I noticed it goes, it starts by going about 85 feet higher than the plinth and then comes down. Perhaps it's to reassure you that it's not going to be so bad when you actually get on it, because you've gone higher and then descended. I think that might be a challenge. Will be a challenge, but hey, I've got my chocolate. I'll be fine.
And can you, you mentioned that you've been abroad, you've kind of travelled around a little bit and lived in various places. Can you tell us a bit about that?
I lived in Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Kenya, Brazil, Gabon in West Africa, and my husband's also been to other countries as well. His job takes him overseas, and when the children were smaller, we went too. So we lived in Saudi Arabia and Egypt. And then at other times the children stayed at school in England, and I sort of commuted between the two countries. So I've been very lucky to not just visit and do touristy things, but actually to buy my pound of potatoes in various languages in various countries, and to really enjoy them, because I feel very strongly that as a visitor to the country, you are a guest, and you learn some of the language, even though I'm really very good at languages, and you just get on with life. And we've had some amazing experiences and met some wonderful people worldwide. So some of them will be watching. There is an Egypt contingent and a US contingent watching, and Benin, which I've had to look up. A friend of mine is in Benin and she's watching, so, as well as Australia and Sicily and the Isle of Wight. I don't think we'll call that abroad there.
And how have these experiences abroad kind of changed you? How have they helped shape how you are?
I hope they've made me more tolerant of people. That just because I do it this way doesn't mean that's the only way or the right way to do it. And accepting of other cultures, religions. Obviously in Saudi Arabia we were there for some time, so we were there for Ramadan. And accepting that not only do the prayers bell sound, you know, 5 times a day, and it's at dawn, which in the summer is very early, is the first one, that, you know, the shops stop. They when we were there, they shut the shops, and if you were inside, you got shut in, which was great fun, and you did your shopping. If you timed it right, you did your shopping, and then when they'd finished prayer, they'd come back, and then they'd let you out, and you could check out and just go. I think an acceptance. Also an acceptance that we are the visitors. When we were in Brazil, my children were very small, and they were about 7 and 8. And we needed some antihistamine cream because one had been bitten by mosquitoes. And although I said the word, which I thought would sound like antihistamine with a strange accent, because we were in a part of Brazil that didn't have many tourists, people were fairly scared of hearing their language in a funny accent. So yeah, I said to older son, "I'm sorry, I don't know the word. You'll have to mime it." And so he did. So he went off and did a mime of "I've been bitten by a mosquito" and pointed to the wound, at which point everybody clapped and shouted "agora, agora," which means "again, again." That bit I did know. So he did it again as they got people off the street to watch it. And I thought that was an absolutely wonderful example of how to communicate. No words were said, but he communicated what he needed, they understood it, and we ended up with a product called antihistamina, which I thought was really what I said, but never mind. But I think that's, you know, that the stereotype of the Brit abroad, you know, who just shouts in English a bit louder. You know, my boys know that they try, ever since they've been tiny, in the correct language to ask for what they want. They didn't know that in French, my husband used to go in the shop in advance and tell the woman what these small people were going to say to her. And age 2 and a half, my younger son went in and asked for a beignet or something in using a selection of words in a very odd order. But he was so thrilled that Madame understood as he came out carrying his beignet. So they've always learned about communicating. And I think that's really important, that you don't just communicate with words, you communicate with body language and with mime and with all sorts of things.
Thank you. And can you tell us a little bit about your family setup then? You mentioned you got 2 sons and your husband.
Any information about them? What they get up to?
Usual 20-year-old, both at university, into sport and a lot of other things, I'm sure. But as their mother, I don't get told about them, which is quite right. That's their life. My husband's currently between jobs and looking for another job, so he's home. So having been used to being on my own for quite a long time, I'm finding the house very cluttered at the moment, which is something I'm having to learn to live with. I think we're just an ordinary family, really, except no family is ordinary. And I have a brother and his family live in London, and cousin lives in London, one cousin in London and one in Northumberland. Parents, sadly, no longer, but presumably sitting on their cloud, are right above the plinth now, watching me. That's family. No pets at the moment, sadly. But when we move again, pets.
And what would you say are the most important things to you at the moment in your life?
Children, husband. That'll do. Chocolate. Yeah, and friends, actually. Friends.
And what kind of hopes do you have for the future, for yourself?
That I achieve everything that I want to do, really. I've been given this, as I said, fourth chance at life, and I'm just going to do it, really, and take everything that's offered. And before, I'd possibly have gone, I couldn't possibly go on the plinth because of that height thing. You know, now I just face my fears and do it anyway. So there we go.
And how are you feeling just before you go on the plinth?
Quite nervous, but excited as well. I just think it's the most amazing thing. And I just hope I don't cry, actually, because that would just be so ghastly. But I am feeling quite emotional about it, that all this excitement and it's finally here on this day. Yeah. No, it's not. My mascara is not waterproof, so we will have no tears.
Great. Are there any closing comments about being one of 2,400 on Trafalgar Square in London for the One Another project?
Just so lucky that my name came out of the hat. I'd wonder, you know, when I first heard, I thought I would have preferred really to have won the lottery, you know, big numbers, you know, 1 million or 2. And then I thought, no, actually I wouldn't. So I'm glad I won this. And maybe I'm winning the lottery, you know, another week. That'd be good.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.